This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Prince. It is a very famous tome of the second millennium AD by a man named Machiavelli. It is also the title of a new podcast at The Economist by Sunlin Wong. And she's now introducing us to what we know and what we want to know about the man who will be king again. Xi Jinping, the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, asking for an unprecedented third term in these next days at the 20th Party Congress. Sunlin, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. The Prince is the title of your podcast. It's chosen very artfully because the Prince is quoted in your podcast and can easily be found anywhere to talk about the Prince because Xi Jinping is a prince, or what is called a princeling in China. We need to start with what that means, why you would refer to him as with a title that comes out of Italian history. What does it mean to be a princeling in China? Good evening to you, Sunlin.
Good evening, John, and thank you so much for having me. That's a great question. And the reason we decided to call our podcast The Prince is because it's a pun. It's both a reference to the fact that Xi Jinping, China's leader, was born into Communist Party royalty, but it's also, as you say, a reference to Machiavelli's famous text about power and how to rule a country. So the reason Xi Jinping is known as a princeling is because his father was one of the founding fathers of modern China and fought alongside Mao Zedong in the Civil War. So when Xi Jinping was born, he was born into Communist Party royalty. He had access to the best schools. He lived in a top compound with nurses and nannies and security guards. And this was all at a time when most people in China were living in abject poverty. So we wanted to allude to the fact that, you know, this isn't your average guy. We wanted to suggest that this podcast series was going to be a study in power. But there's actually a third reference, which is that we don't believe Xi Jinping is necessarily at the peak of his power yet. So, you know, in a couple of weeks, he's very, very likely to get, as you said, an unprecedented third term as the leader of China. And so what lies ahead for this man is a big question that matters not just for Chinese people, but for everyone around the world.
Your profile begins with a man who has sometimes used the word timid, shy, standoffish. I'm surprised to learn that his preparation for being the general secretary again, with the power in his hands, was 17 years at what is described as a dull job in Fujian province, and then some more years in the neighboring province. And his wife is a popular singer, nationalist, patriotic songs. Nothing I'm reading about him suggests that he was a man of great authority or vividness, you know, a prince beyond princes. So was this a surprise to see him emerging after 2012 as a power broker?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question because Xi Jinping, even though he was born into Communist Party royalty, he had a very traumatic childhood. So his dad was purged from the leadership when he was just 9 years old. And Xi Jinping then was tormented during the Cultural Revolution in China when frenzied mobs unleashed by Mao Zedong beat, tortured, and killed people. And one of the people that they targeted was Xi Jinping. Now, he survived, but he really suffered during this period. And one lesson he learned was the importance of keeping a low profile, keeping your head down, and, you know, knowing to be very, very careful about what you say, lest you offend the wrong people. And that was really the strategy he adopted throughout his career. So as you mentioned, he spent decades in China's provinces. Most notably, he spent 17 years in the southern Chinese province of Fujian, which is on the coast, and when he was there, a very poor, backwards province. And throughout that time, people I spoke to who, for the podcast, who knew him back then said he was very timid and he wasn't a very interesting politician to cover. And so for local journalists there, they all wanted to cover other people in that province who were, you know, maybe a bit more flamboyant or exciting or out there. But Xi Jinping, he really kept his head down, and he had this approach of hiding and biding. And so that meant that when he became the leader of China, almost nobody really expected he would do as he has done today. But the only other thing I would add to that is what's really interesting is I've been digging through archival material. And in fact, Xi Jinping himself has spoken about how his dad, who, as I mentioned, was one of the founders of modern China, drilled into his kids from an early age that they too should be revolutionaries. And they were the true inheritors of the Chinese Communist Party. So he does genuinely believe that he's on a mission to save the party. And he does genuinely believe that he's a true inheritor of the Chinese Communist Party.
He has doubts. He has fears. He's mortal. And I go to the your colleague, James Miles, has written a presentation of your 8-part podcast. And at one point in 2000, I believe it's Xi Jinping himself or perhaps a correspondent talking about him, worries about cowsheds and that the people blow hot and cold. I believe this is a metaphorical way of talking about how the uneasy lies the head that wears the crown, you know, to paraphrase Shakespeare. And so what we have here is a tradition of revolution, but at the same time, a tradition of upsetting revolutions. Does that evidence itself today with Xi Jinping, all this power? Is he still worried about the cowsheds, which I think refers to the prisons operating during the Red Guard period?
That's exactly right. So the cowsheds are a reference to the jails that the Red Guards used to lock people up in, including Xi Jinping himself. And so that quote you just referred to is a very famous quote from Xi Jinping himself, where he says, you know, some people, when they see power, they see the flowers, they see the glory, they see the applause. But when I see power, I see the jails and I see the hypocrisy of the world. And so I think that's a very realist take on what power is, and speaks to how traumatized he was as a teenager when he was attacked by these Red Guards and when he was sent to live in a cave for 7 years in the Chinese countryside. And I think that sort of attitude towards power is something that we can see reflected even today in how he rules China and how China increasingly engages with the rest of the world.
Some of this is wonderful anecdote. The one that strikes me most vividly is the reported conversation with Joe Biden, then Vice President of the United States, in 2011 when he met Xi Jinping. And the report by your colleague James Miles is that they had a few moments trying to shoot baskets together, basketball. What from that conversation represents Xi Jinping, the man, before he became the general secretary in 2012? What did Joe Biden, what did his counselors make of him at that moment?
Yeah, so I think at the time, the Americans were really trying to get a sense of, you know, who is the man who's going to lead China? And both Biden and Xi were trying to be good ambassadors of their countries. And so they engaged in some sort of awkward basketball diplomacy. But I think what really struck me about that meeting, based on interviews we did with people who were present, was Xi Jinping spoke at length about the Arab Spring and sort of how fragile governments can be. And it really seemed like he was thinking about China and the fragility of the Communist Party. And one thing we know about Xi Jinping is that the collapse of the Soviet Union really haunts him personally, and it also haunts the Chinese Communist Party. And they see the collapse of the Soviet Union, they put it down to a couple of reasons, including, you know, the rampant corruption at the time and the loss of ideological discipline. And what we saw when Xi Jinping came into power was that he wanted to make sure that he would crack down on corruption in China and really ramp up the ideological discipline so that from his perspective, the Chinese Communist Party would not face the same fate as the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. And I think that's something we forget about in the West sometimes, because, you know, Mikhail Gorbachev is really hailed as a hero in the West. But in China, he's seen in a very, very different light. And for the Chinese Communist Party, the collapse of the Soviet Union was a complete disaster and a fate that they really want to avoid.
It's a fascinating connection between the two states. I believe what we learn from this presentation is that never take the name of a previous leader of the country in vain, the way Khrushchev did in the secret speech of 1956 denouncing Stalin. I believe that that could be, if you were writing a play here, that would be the foreshadowing of the end. However, we come to those first moments of Xi Jinping in authority in 2012 and the mystery of the purging of Bo Xilai. Bo Xilai was the leader, I believe, of Chongqing. My memory is incomplete, Su Lin, so help me if I have the wrong city. But he was a very powerful and popular and romantic character. So was his wife. They accumulated a lot of power despite a minimal salary paid at the time to the head of the city. And he was purged along with a very powerful member of the standing committee, Zhao Yongkang, who was very well-to-do, and there were generals involved as well. So right away, Xi Jinping was faced with a challenge to his authority or a challenge to the party's authority. How is that remembered now, that moment about Bo Xilai?
Yeah, I mean, the sort of story of Bo Xilai, as you very well summarized, is sort of worthy of a Hollywood drama. So there was this rising Chinese political star who was seen as a bit of a rival to Xi Jinping. And then all of a sudden, his wife murders a British businessman. His police chief tries to defect to the American consulate in a neighboring city. And then, no one really knows what's going on. But once Xi Jinping takes power, he purges Bo Xilai, one of his main rivals. And not only that, as you said, he goes after other people who were seen to be close to Bo Xilai. And so looking back now, it seems like, you know, Xi Jinping genuinely felt under threat. He felt like there was a potential coup underway, and he needed to exercise his authority and crush any kind of opposition. But what's really surprising is that these people who he saw as a threat were very, very powerful within the Chinese Communist Party, within the system. And so I think what took a lot of sort of people following the story by surprise was that Xi Jinping had enough power and had enough clout to purge this group of people. And I think that really set the tone because, you know, if you have these powerful rivals who are not safe, then no one is safe in Xi Jinping's China.
Su Lin Wang for The Economist magazine. She is the host of an 8-part conversation, a podcast called The Prince about Xi Jinping. James Miles, her colleague, has written up a summary of the podcast. We're going to turn not necessarily to the future, but the immediate question about how Xi Jinping sees his role now as he takes the unprecedented third term. If it happens, and it's supposed to happen, what is his relationship to the people of China, to the prosperity of China, to the elders who retain great authority in the Chinese Communist Party, and the immediate future with regard to the United States and the neighboring countries, especially Taiwan. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.